Hi, this is Jerry Stiller. You are listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Where are my keys? Anybody see my keys? Who took my keys?
The bells of hell go ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me. Oh, death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling, or grave thy victory? If you meet the undertaker, or the young man from the crew, have a pint with what's left over. Now I say goodbye to you. For the bells of hell go ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me. Oh, death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling, or grave thy victory?
Yes, Malachi. I don't know how you did
there,
it.
Hello there, John.
Malachi McCourt survived St. Patrick's, not day, but week. Malachi, following you got me tired between Facebook and all the events that were on. And Malachi, before you talk, let me just explain to our audience what Malachi and myself have been up to this week. Because we could use 2 hours this week. I thank the station for giving us 2 hours last week. But Malachi McCourt, last Sunday, the New York Times, and then the Irish Times reprinted it. And because of that, he was on RTE yesterday throughout the country of Ireland. WABC, Frank Morano, also had Laurie Shapiro on talking about the article. There was an ad in the New York Post for WABC. Malachi's picture was in it. Malachi's op-ed piece is in the West Side Spirit. Our Town Downtown, Our Town Upper East Side, the Chelsea News. He was on Inside Edition. He was at the parade. He was at Gracie Mansion. And here's how Frank Morano alerted his audience to the article in the New York Times.
I posted the wonderful article in the New York Times that was done for the Sunday Times on this past weekend on my friend Malachi McCourt, who's been a guest on this show many times. And I had intended to call him yesterday, but the day escaped me. I'm hoping that we'll get him on next week. And it turns out the writer of this piece, Lori Gwen Shapiro, is a fascinating person in her own right. She's an award-winning documentary filmmaker. She's a journalist. She's an author. And I found myself, once I looked her up, and when I shared a link to the article, a lot of people emailed me about some of the great work that she's done. I found myself just going down a rabbit hole, unable to stop reading not only her work, but to stop reading about her. So she's a fascinating person. We're going to talk about the profile that she did on Malachi McCourt and some of the other work that she has done in just a moment. Lori Gwen Shapiro joins us on the other side of midnight with unnamed Mr. Morrow.
And Malachi, that was you. You talked about on WABC, RTE. I mean, you've had some week. I mean, unbelievable. You were at Gracie Mansion with the mayor. I mean, good God. I don't know if I missed anything, but Jesus.
Well, I guess you I didn't think. You missed yourself being a...
Oh, no, I got a list. I'm going to give that later, the things I was involved with. But I just wanted to hear. I mean, whoever was hanging out with you had to be tired because you didn't miss anything during the week.
Very strange, John. When I arrived in New York, I was thinking one of the things I wanted to be around to see was that St. Patrick's Day parade because it was so well spoken of in Ireland and people always talked about it. And I thought, oh, God, maybe I'll go there and march with them or so, or maybe get to see it. That was it, you see. So then I remember my first looking at it over the years. And so then all of a sudden I'm part of it. And I shook hands with the Cardinal. I couldn't believe it. I went over. I just extended my hand, and he said, he called me by my name, and I called him by his. So anyway, we had a very brief chat, and I said, "Stick around." And he said, "Okay." And off I went back to the parade, and there it was. So it was, and I thought that because I was marching with the gay people, that he would turn his back on them. But he didn't, I must say, because that has happened before, that the clergy disapproved of gay people, they said, you know. It takes a sinner, one sinner to know another. But anyway, they and then early in the morning, I went with Siobhan and Connor, my kids, to Gracie Mansion. And that's a fascinating building and house. Only the mayor and his family are allowed to live there. And so a few mayors haven't. Bloomberg decided not to. He liked his apartment. And also he had a wife or something. And then Giuliani couldn't live there because he tried to move his girlfriend in, but his wife wouldn't move out. So that was it. She stayed there until the end of his term, and then she moved out. But it was she prevented him anyway from that. So he had to move out, and Giuliani did. And that was so, I don't know, maybe something, punishment of sinners or something like that. And then I went up Fifth Avenue in my wheelchair, got a lot of shouts from people. And it was that article in the Times last week. A lot of people recognized me from that. So there it was. And so, it said that Laurie Shapiro didn't write that I was going to stay around for another St. Patrick's Day. Some editor put that in, or somebody else put it in. A headline person. So that's it, you know. So you got to watch out for headlines. I mean, St. Patrick's Day is now, the reason I get involved with it now is because it's a party. It's a get together. It's a celebration of being Irish. And I like being Irish. And it's not a bad nationality to have. These days, most people don't discriminate against you. As a matter of fact, they think that you're, some people think that you have to be right wing now to be Irish, but I'm not that. But the whole thing now of St. Patrick himself, and he was not canonized a saint, so he's not really a saint. And then he has to have a proof of two miracles attributed in his name, and that's it. So he doesn't have that, no miracles, no canonization, and they call him Saint Patrick. And that, of course, is, as I've told you many times, is incorrect as well, that his name is not Patrick. His original name was Maewen Suckett, and he was not Irish. I mean, most people think he is. He was captured as a slave and by some Irish pirates and sold to a farmer in the north of Ireland. He was 16, and then he was there on the hills of Antrim tending sheep. 4 years, and he escaped at the age of 20 and went to, got on a boat somehow or another, and managed to get to France, where he joined up with his uncle, who persuaded him, who was a priest, and he became a priest and ordained by the bishop there. Then he went to Rome for some reason, and became the Pope made him a bishop and asked him what he would like to do. So Paddy over there says he'd love to go back to Ireland. So the Pope said, off you go. Yeah. So that was it. He
back. The rest is history, Maliki.
Yep. Good civilization that was ruined by by this conversion.
Well,
but anyway,
Maliki,
that.
Yeah, we have a full show today. One of our guests, our first guest in about 5 minutes is going to be Keith Kelly. He used to work for the New York Post, a writer, but he retired. And he comes out of retirement now. He's editing four newspapers, Our Town, the West Side Spirit, and the Chelsea News. And he's going to be talking about how Maliki is in all those papers with an op-ed piece and what it's like to work with Maliki McCourt to get an op-ed piece in there. And then next week is the 112th anniversary of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire down on Washington and Green. And we're going to head over to Dublin and speak with Raiden Reed. She is with SAIL, which is an addiction center for women in Dublin. And she's going to talk about International Women's Day and about the Shirtwaist Factory and the connection there. And then Annie Lanzalotto, my Bronx compadre, who I was with last night in Queens at QED, she'll be coming on because she's helping to organize the commemoration along with Lulu Lolo. And I'll be telling a story about Lulu giving me a T-shirt that I wore in Dublin that sort of made this come about. But Maliki, I was down at Grand Central Station yesterday, and right across the street on 42nd Street at Pershing Square, you have the 50 Paddy Irishman portraits. Not all of them. There's about maybe 15 of them there. And then I went to meet one of them. That was Dr. Patrick Tracy, a good Fermanagh man who we're going to have on in the near future. He has an unbelievable background in history. And then, Maliki, I was on the front page. You might have had the Times. I had the Irish Ledger. The Irish Voice put an article in about how the Irish peace process cost me $1 million. And the Irish Echo has given me an award, the Irish Arts and Culture. The only thing is, I got to go to Buffalo to get it, but that's going to happen. And then next Saturday, I will be at the Irish American Heritage Museum in Albany, New York, on March 25th. That's next Saturday. There's still a couple of tickets left. Just type in Irish American Heritage Museum, Albany. Come on, all you refugee hippies that left New York and went up to Woodstock and up to Albany. Come now for the show. And that this Tuesday, I made a mistake last week. I hope people didn't show up. But at the Ellington, the Irish American Writers and Artists will be having a salon at 105th Street and Broadway next Tuesday at 7 o'clock. So if you want to go up there, it's always a great night out. It's not only storytelling, it's poetry, it's singing, and it's everything else. But Maliki, I want to let the audience know what it's like to deal with one Maliki McCourt. This morning, I started calling you at 10 o'clock, busy signal. It means your phone is off the hook. I tried the cell phone. I tried Diana's cell phone. I try emailing. And then about 15 minutes to 11, because now I'm in panic mode, I get back in touch. But right now, we're going to go to Keith Kelly, and he's going to explain about trying to get an op-ed piece from you. So, Keith, maybe, you know, as a seasoned professional, the New York Post, editor of four papers, you probably deal with this type of stuff all the time. But what was it like to get an op-ed piece from Maliki McCourt?
It was quite interesting. So, after the Times article, I figured, well, you know what would be very good? And Maliki, in his past, had been a regular contributor to the West Side Spirit. So I figured this would be interesting if we did a story on, you know, the old joke headline about how various papers covered the end of the world. And it's a dated joke, but it's like the headline of the New York Post would be, you know, how do you cover the end of the world? So the Post headline, they said at the time, would be world ends, Michael Jackson dead. The Daily News was world ends, 2 billion people dead, Jews and Irish most impacted, you know. So my theory was maybe I'll do a headline for the West Side Spirit. 2 million people and Malachi McCourt turn out for St. Patrick's Day Parade. But so I called him and I said, hey, Malachi, what would you be interested in doing a like an op-ed for on a fairly tight deadline for next week's paper? And he said, oh, sure. And he goes, the only thing is I don't type. I said, how in the world can you write? Did you manage to write a best-selling novel without knowing how to type? I mean, not a novel, a best-selling memoir without knowing how to type. I said, well, maybe I can get my brother or I can stop by. He goes, no, I'll find somebody. So I said, okay, we need it. I figured if you can get it to me Sunday, and he goes, well, he says, can I get it to you Monday night? I said, well, I kind of do layout on Monday night. So if you can get it to me Sunday, that'd be great. Or later, maybe noon on Monday, I could still get it in. So about 5:20 on Monday night, his granddaughter, who's typing it up, unaware of our deadline, is like, oh, I'm typing it up now. I'm proofreading it. And so it arrives first thing Tuesday morning. So I'm like, well.
Aren't you the lucky man?
I'm not going to make my pre-St. Patrick's Day thing. But I said, you know, you got to improvise. And I said, well, now we can break the world exclusive that Malachi McCourt makes it to another St. Patrick's Day. And that's going to be our headline for the print editions. That's next week. So he busted the deadline. But he busted the deadline, and in true fashion, it's become a better story. I told him, give me about 750 words. I think he gave me about 1,800, about three times. I said, yeah, it's a little long. He goes, oh, I thought it might be too short. And here's a funny thing. The owner of this chain of newspapers, she's got about 20 papers. Years ago, her father owned Strauss Media, which owned WMCA, where Malachi had a radio show on Saturday and Sunday in the 70s, a talk radio show. They were one of the first talk radios. So I tell her, oh, I have Malachi McCourt. He's going to do an op-ed. And she said, well, you know, he kind of goes long. And I said, well, I told, don't worry, I told him 750 words. And she says, he'll never do it in 750.
You're well known, Malachi.
The Malachi McCourt.
So, well, the Strauss have no faith in me.
I have complete faith. I tried it out on, you know, we have a reporter who, she went to Notre Dame, but she's not really Irish. So I said, just read this story the way it is now and let me know, because I'm fascinated by it. Malachi's a character, but I don't want to let my Irishness, like, overshadow the whole thing. If it's not a good story for the masses, you know, I have a big audience of, and most of them probably aren't Irish, nor are they Catholic. So I want to make sure it has wide appeal. And she says, great story. So all I got to do is find two pages for the print edition and we're all set. But I have you in the St. Patrick's Day coverage already, where you say, I made it to another St. Patrick's Day. So we'll have you in two stories in the print editions. So it's an experience editing Malachi McCourt. It could be, it gives me real appreciation to what the editors of A Monk Swimming must have done to get that memoir. I think, was that Simon & Schuster or Random House?
That was Disney.
Hyperion. Okay.
Hyperion, yeah.
Okay.
And then it was picked up by somebody, a lot of other people.
Hyperion, I think they got bought, but why, whatever. They're a quality. They were owned by Walt Disney when they were trying to become a multimedia.
That's right, yeah.
So they were a quality, and I think they
were. It was a woman named Maureen O'Brien who was
Maureen
there.
Colleague of mine.
Yeah.
At the New York Post, and then she went into the book world. Actually, she was one of my predecessors I used to do the Media Inc. column, and she was actually the first, the very first Media Inc. column. So I inherited it from her. And yeah, she had a very, very long career in the book publishing world.
Indeed. And she's about, she's living in California near her parents, and she's fine. She's still at work and all of that. So that was very good.
Anyway,
she was very, very kind with me, and I had a great time with, you know, being able to, they pretty much let me write what I wanted to write. And I didn't, of course, I don't know anything about, I didn't know anything about publishing or anything. I knew a little bit from talking to Frank, but it was, I didn't know where to stop. That was what it was.
Yeah, no.
There it was. And I still don't. But I think.
Well, I give you credit. When I left the Post, people were saying, well, you should write a book. I'm like, what do you think? I'd had a great run running in the media world, but I'm not sure if I write a book that I want to rehash what I've been doing for the last 20 or 30 years. Necessarily. And because I know, generally speaking, media books don't really sell. And everybody in the media wants you to send them a book for free. So my primary audience all wants free copies. So, so it's a memoir is a very deft trick. And I think what Frank did and what you did, any story that's meticulously and honestly well played, I'm of the believer that everybody has one good book in them. They're like, they don't know it most of the time. And I think, who would have think that this family in Brooklyn, the father drinks a lot, and then they go to Ireland. Who would think that's a good story? And he doesn't get a pension. What? You know, it's a story well told and honestly told. And both of the memoirs are inspirations. You know, I only basically... I don't know the younger Malachi. I only started following him from the time of Frank and the memoir, and so I only go back to the 90s. So, you know, when I look at the old pictures of young Malachi as like this flaming red-haired guy with the rugged good looks, longshoreman, it's quite uplifting. Now we're in the category. I'm in the same category of, you know, you look at the gray head and we're like, well, at least we still got hair.
Yeah. Well, I saw your gleaming face at Gracie Mansion.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. I was just talking about how Rudy Giuliani couldn't live there.
Remember that. Yeah. The judge said that as long as Donna wanted to live there with the kids, he couldn't bring their girlfriend in. And now he's involved in a massive divorce suit with Judy Nathan. I don't know if the divorce has been settled or...
Yeah.
That's costly.
And Bloomberg didn't live there either. I guess he decided not to live there.
Yeah, he was a couple of blocks away. And I think his point of view is kind of shabby. But what he did do is, because he wasn't in there, he put in a lot of money into renovating it. So the city benefited by him not being there. So, got rid of a lot of the old couches.
All right,
I guess they had some fold out couches. I don't know.
You're listening to W.
Make it more of a historical point of reference. So
Well, Keith, I thank you for coming on, for putting in my Q&A last week into all the papers you're editing. I see it's the number three most read article.
It's still trending,
I'm trending. Oh, who knew? Who knew I'd be trending? And thank you for that. Thank you for putting Malachi in, who will be two pages in all those four papers. And
We got the stuff online first, so we're good on that. And then we have the print editions, which start coming out Wednesday and Thursday. So,
he used to deliver the West Side Spirit to my lobby here, but I haven't seen it in a long time.
I have to talk to our CERT guys. I think what happened during COVID, they came up with the idea like, well, maybe there's germs on the papers. We don't want to get them. So we're still kind of rebuilding.
No, for God's sake.
A lot of that. Yeah. But I'll hand deliver the copies for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Well,
all the best, Keith.
Well, Malachi, we're going to finish up now with the 112th anniversary of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. There's going to be a commemoration on Friday, March 24th, 11:30 to 1 p.m. at Washington Place and Green Street. I've been there a couple of times. It's a great commemoration. We're going to play a song by Annie Lanzalotto, who not only does she tell stories, write poetry, but she also sings. And when we come out of that, we're going to head over to Dublin, and we're going to speak to Rinnan Reid, who is with SAIL, which is an addiction center for women in Dublin, as he's going to talk to us about International Women's Day. And then we're going to go to Lulu Lolo and Annie about the commemoration and what it's all about and what will be happening. So first we'll go to the song Girls, Girls, and this is about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory.
Girls, girls. Girls, girls, teenage immigrants, tell me, where'd you work last night? Somebody tell me. Come on, Rosie! Sarah! Daisy! Washington and Green in the factory where the door kept locked by greed. Oh, girls, girls, teenage immigrants, tell me, where'd you go in the fire? Rosaria, Tessa, Katarina, somebody tell me. I jumped to the street where my bones and concrete meet. The sewer my blood runs through. I jumped to the street where my bones and concrete meet. The sewer my blood runs through. Girls, girls, teenage immigrants, tell me of your New York dreams. Antonietta, Celia, Annie, Rosaria, somebody tell me. Well, I ran from poverty, persecution, misery. We were starving, needed a buck. Got on a boat to try my luck. I made it cross the sea to the wave of liberty. Worked a triangle factory in New York garment industry, where amber waves of flame caught me. So dove for the sky, broken window promises, spring air. I prayed, New York City, catch me. We were body makers, sleeve makers, sleeve setters, collar makers, cuff setters, yoke setters, buttonhole makers, tuckers, closers, hammers, joiners, finishers, pressers, button sewers, lace runners, embroidery trimmers, thread trimmers, sample makers, makers, joiners, fasteners, finishers. Oh, girls, girls, teenage immigrants, tell me, how burning hot is greed? Come on, tell me. Sadie! Oh, Lena! Jose! Margaret! Well, our breath caught the fire, hair and lace, the flames, and cinders became our name. Our breath caught the fire, hair and lace, the flames, and cinders became our names. Our breath caught the fire, hair and lace, the flames, and cinders became our names.
Oof, sorry for stepping on that. That was Annie Lanzalotto singing about the anniversary of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. But now we head over to Dublin, and when I was over there doing my play Off the Meter at the Sean O'Casey Theater, I did a fundraiser for SAIL, which is a center for women in the north side of Dublin. And I was wearing the shirt with the names of the women on my back and the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. And someone told the tale about how 27 years ago, they picked a date in March to found SAIL. And one of the people that works there, is it Renan?
Radine.
Yeah, Radine. Maybe you could explain what is SAIL and how did it get started 27 years ago?
Sure. It's great to be talking to you from a very, very wet Dublin. You have no idea how awful it is here today. So it's lovely to hear the American voices because it reminds me of perhaps there is sunshine where you are. Am I right?
You got that right. Yes.
The sun is shining, yeah.
So SAIL is Ireland's only women's drug rehabilitation and treatment centre. And we're based in the north side of Dublin. And I suppose a very significant area because it is at that real intersection of serious. The north side of Dublin is such an interesting place. Around the corner from us is a Magdalen Laundry. There is a workhouse over like on another street. There is a long history of institutionalization and marginalization of that community. I was really struck by the song because that could have happened in the north side in Dublin, do you know? So SAIL is really, it is an addiction service, but it's more a place of love, hope, compassion and creativity. So we really passionately believe that sometimes life can be harder for women. And it's so good to be talking to you guys today about International Women's Day, because it's a really important part of the day of the calendar that we celebrate our women, all of our women, but we take a political stand and stand in solidarity against situations like the shirt factory, against situations where women are oppressed. And we're quite provocative in the way that we do it. So we stand on the Rosie Hackett Bridge. I think you visited there when you came to visit us in Dublin. Yep. You were maybe on that bridge.
Yep, I have been.
Yeah. And that's the only bridge in Dublin that's named after a woman. So that's why we choose the Rosie Hackett Bridge. And we stand and we sing and we chant and we tie together our underwear, the bras go across the bridge, so like hands across the bridge, really is a sign of female power, because we don't often have the opportunity for the women that we work with to stand as the powerful women that they are. So we're 27 years acting, I suppose, as a refuge for women, and I suppose really trying to reflect back to them just how beautiful and valuable and important they are, because they've lost that. You know, they've lost that, or they were never shown that. Nobody ever told them that they were special or important. And even no matter what is happening for them in their lives, they are still special, beautiful, valuable women that we want to make sure that they feel that when they walk through the doors of SAIL.
Well, Ray,
is there an attitude towards women? I remember when I was growing up in Limerick, there was the male attitude was she's just a woman. It was like a peculiar creature of no importance was a woman. And has that changed?
I think it has changed, but it hasn't changed enough.
Yeah.
You know, I think there is still that attitude. My mother always says, she has this great phrase. She says, men is bosses. So there's still that attitude that men are kings and women do what we need to make sure that our men are okay. And I still think that prevails certainly in Ireland. I know even, and I think that's one of the reasons why we try to be so provocative about standing for women, because our women in SAIL, they may have to deal with their life struggle by using substances, but they are judged so ferociously in a way that their men are not. You know, they're bad mothers, they're bad women, they're so judged and stigmatized, and they experience that from from doctors and from nurses and from teachers, from social workers. They really do in a way that men are not. And that's part of that patriarchal attitude that, yeah. you know, men are somehow more important or more valuable than women. And we want to kind of say, well, you know, we believe in the value of men and we believe in the value of women. That's what feminism is all about, really. Yeah. That we're all pretty fantastic in our own way.
Well, Ray Dean, if you could just hang on the line, I want to go to the people organizing the commemoration next week. First, we go to Lulu Lolo. Lulu, can you give us what exactly happened on that day on March 25th and how many people died?
Okay, yeah, hi. First of all, Malachy, thank you for that history of St. Patrick. I didn't call that. And Ray Dean, inspiring. You're wonderfully inspiring. I'd love to be on that bridge with you commemorating.
You will be so welcome.
Oh, Ray Dean, what date do you celebrate?
We celebrate the 8th of March.
Right. That's what's known usually in Europe and Italy. I know that's the date. Our commemoration is always March 25th, but this year we are having the ceremonies on March 24th, a Friday, to accommodate having school children. On March 25th, 1911, a fire started on the 8th floor at the factory, the shirtwaist factory, at Washington Place in Green Street, and in less than 20 minutes, 146 workers, mostly young Jewish and Italian women, perished in that fire, many of them jumping to their death. And as Annie was singing, those are the names of many of the women. There were 8 pairs of sisters, 2 brothers, mothers. And I'm with the Remember the Triangle Fire Coalition, and we have been working, spearheading for over 12 years to have a memorial to the Triangle Fire. And it's going to happen. We're very excited. We're fabricating the memorial right now. And sometime later in 2023, you'll all be notified in time so you can fly over and take part in the unveiling of the Triangle Memorial. And let me tell you what it is. It's going to be one of the few memorials to workers, to women, and to immigrants in the country, the first labor memorial in New York City. And it was designed by Yuri Wegman and Richard Jun Yu, who were chosen by a jury, an international competition with over 170 entries from more than 30 countries. And these guys were from Queens. The design of the memorial consists of a textured stainless steel ribbon, like a mourning ribbon that's draped over buildings. And the ribbon's going to cascade from the corner of the 9th floor window of the Brown Building, marking the location where most of the victims died or jumped from the windows.
Excuse me. I remember a reading quite a while ago about the actual fire. I was trying to remember why the door was locked and they couldn't get out.
Well, there's various reasons. The owners of the factory would lock the door to control the workers leaving, and also to inspect whether they were stealing fabric. But also, it was felt the doors were locked so the unions couldn't come in and organize the workers.
And what was that would do with the... They had to get permission to go to the lavatory? Was
yes, that? Everything. So, you get fined if you laughed.
Yeah.
Talked. Right, exactly.
I want to bring Annie Lancelotto in on this. Annie, I got to see you speak at the Italian Institute Center on 43rd Street, and you have a unique perspective that you went back to Italy to find out where some of these girls were from, and you went to one church where they were baptized. Tell us about that journey, and is there much knowledge in Italy about the women that died?
Hey, all right. It's a pleasure to be here, John, and everybody. Yes, there are women and activists in Italy, especially through the south of Italy, organizing under an organization called Toponomastica Femminile, which puts the names of women who died of violence onto street signs and piazza signs and fountains for peace and justice in the past, yes, to put the women's names. And I got to meet Esther Rizzo, who calls the mayors of the towns where the girls who died in Triangle were born. Over 20 were born in Sicily, very near to each other. And she calls every mayor and says, we have to mark the birthplace with a marble plaque. We have to honor these young teenage immigrant girls who went to America in desperation to earn money so that their families back home could survive. They were workers. And yes, one day I was sitting in a cathedral in Enna, a mountain town in Sicily, and there was a handmade ladder there. And out of all the gorgeous artwork in this church, the ladder made me cry, and I didn't know why. And later, I realized it was like two stories tall, handmade with ropes out of a tree branches. It was the height that was needed at the Triangle Fire as an extension, because the fire ladder only reached to the sixth floor. And we needed a couple more floors of a ladder as an extension. So as the workers jumped, they might have had a chance. And then I found out that Giuseppina Camerata, who died as a teenager in the Triangle Fire, was born in that town of Enna and baptized at that church next to that ladder. That was an ancient handmade piece of wood ladder from a tree. And, you know, it's very moving for us, for those of us artists and activists and other cultural workers who walk the streets every year and chalk the names of the girls and the workers on the sidewalks outside of the homes where they were born, where they lived when they walked to work to the Triangle Fire, to the Triangle Factory. And Ruth Sergel initiated the Chalk Project and the Remember the Triangle Fire Coalition. And anyone can join up. If you want to chalk a name, go to streetpictures.org, streetpictures.org. And Ruth will give you the name and address of where a worker lived when they were at the Triangle Fire. And you'll see us all out there. You know, Lulu and all of us will be out there chalking the names.
We did it last year together, Annie. Remember?
Yes, yes, we did. And, you know, there were many heroes that day, John. And working class, immigrant, young people heroes. And one day, I was out there for one of the commemorations, and there were all these beautiful school children in fire hats holding up shirt waists with the names of the workers. And I saw that these kids were horrified by the images, you know, that were being presented about the fire. And I thought to myself, what could I do to uplift these kids? So I looked at the crowd. I said, everyone, look up at the top of the building and say, thanks, Joe. And we started chanting, thanks, Joe. Thanks, Joe. Joe Zito was a young teenager from the province of Salerno outside Napoli in Italy. And he worked one of the elevators in the Triangle Fire. And when the fire in the Triangle Factory, and when the fire broke out, he didn't run away. And neither did the other elevator operators, Gaspare Mortilato and Thomas Horton. And those are the ones we know of. They went up into the fire and rescued over 150 workers. Oh. And in Joe's own testimony, he said, those poor girls are trapped up there. And he made 18 trips up into the fire until he was half dead at the bottom of the elevator shaft with wounds and inhalation and broken bones. And the police arrested him as a material witness. Now, Malachi, to your point, there was a lot of anti-Italian sentiment that Italians were thieves and wrongdoers. And Joe Zito, one of the heroes, was arrested, and it took the DA, I think his name was Charles Whitman. Charles Whitman. He came, he said, get this man out of handcuffs. He's a hero. And he sent him to St. Vincent's Hospital to recover. And we all miss St. Vincent's Hospital. You know, there's no hospital down there in the West Village.
For Annie, do you have a song for that? Do you want to give a few verses on?
Yeah, I'll give a verse or two. Why not?
Go ahead.
This is for Joe Zito. And what happened is when I called his name in thanks, the next day I got an email from his great-granddaughter, Jane. And she said, thank you for recognizing, you know, my great-grandfather.
Oh.
And so then we've been in touch. Okay, here's a bit. Girls dove into Joe's elevator car, clutching fabric shears and scissors. Another guy would have minded his own business. But Italian-American to the core, Joe Zito never ran for the door. Up, 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 Joe, 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 into fire. Higher he climbed. He went back up about 18 times. Why didn't Joe go up a 19th, you say? Mezzo morte at the bottom of the shaft. Or noble Joe lay. Here's another little piece that we didn't mention. Judge Crane and his gavel said shirtwaist kings are not to blame. And Joe Zito left New York City in a state of deprivation, shell-shocked from triangle workers' asphyxiation and decapitations. Scarred for life from all he saw, Joe headed west and 7 years later registered for the Army during the Great War. No rich man could buy Joe's word. His green sad eyes had saw and heard. All the papers said he died without a penny. No bribe could change Joe's testimony. The shirtwaist kings offered $1,000 bribes while the U.S. economy took a great dive. But Joe kept free to tell the truth while the shirtwaist kings got rich off insurance loot. And like too many of our brave, our noble Joe was buried in an unmarked grave. His grave is marked now, I'm glad to say. And, you know, John, as a poet, sometimes I can't really do much except sing an unsung hero. So now I'm glad to say Joe Zito is sung. He's sung. He's not unsung. And that's all I could do.
Right.
What does shirt waist mean? I meant to ask that. What exactly? What's a shirt waist?
That was the fashion of the day. If you picture, like you could see Katharine Hepburn or like that Gibson girl look with the puffy mutton sleeves and the tight waist. Lulu could chime in here.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Annie. It was the fashion of the day that the working women wore, and they were working in that factory. One additional thing I wanted to say about our memorial is that all of the names and ages of the workers will be on the memorial. They'll be cut through laser, and light will come through from the sky and illuminate their names. Down onto a reflective panel. So this is the first time all of their names will be represented. And I also want to say, go to the Remember the Triangle Fire Coalition. RememberTheTriangleFire.org website.
This Friday, 11:30 to 1, over in Greenwich Village at Washington Place and Green Street. And Ray Dean, I thank you for being part of this solidarity with the women here and the women in Dublin.
And John and Ray Dean, it's going to be live streamed too, so you all can, you know, be there on Facebook at Triangle Fire Coalition.
Yeah.
So you
can. It's so lovely to be able to be part of this, and we'll absolutely look at it on Facebook Live. It sounds like such an important commemoration of really important people.
And they raise up, the fire engines will be there, and they'll raise the symbolic ladder to the sixth floor. Because all of the workers were on the 8th, 9th, and 10th.
And Lulu, what I also like is everyone's given a rose and you lay it at the foundation and you recite the name of one of the people that died.
Yeah, so yeah, come and do that, yes. And come and carry a shirtwaist too, okay?
This is such a carry-on. Lovely.
Maliki, I got to meet Siobhan yesterday, your lovely daughter. I was so happy to meet her. She's radiant like you, Maliki.
Thank you, love. I'm very proud of Siobhan. She's a very generous person, delightful. And it's a very peculiar, it used to be a totally male-oriented situation, but I think they're getting a bit sensible now with the ladies, the women, and more women are involved in organizing it. But the shirt waist fire is such a blot on the history of this city, indeed of the country, and that there were no male casualties, were there?
There were. There were about
17.
Right, 17.
17.
But that was very quickly, what were the law changes?
Right, I mean, it was significant. Women and yeah. 17 men. And the youngest girls were 14. I'd say about 53 of the victims were between the ages of 18 and 14.
Good Lord.
Yeah. I wanted to ask Ray Dean what her website is.
Hello, Ray Dean?
Maybe she's not on.
Yeah.
Well, maybe she will.
Well. But you know what it is? If you type in SAOL Dublin, it'll pop up the website. So that's probably the easiest way of getting in touch. They need help. I know the Irish American writers and artists have been contributing to that. I've been there a couple of times. It's a great place. I don't want to say a fun place, but it's a great place to go to see people that can be safe that go there. But quickly, Lulu, what were some of the changes in the labor laws because of that one fire, which was, you know, huge, you know, at the time in New York?
Well, you know, Frances Perkins was nearby and she witnessed the fire and she said the Triangle Fire was the day the New Deal began. And simple things that we take for granted now, the exit signs, the push doors, when you're exiting, it pushes out because those doors were locked. So it was really a turning point. And it's important that it's recognized the history of the Triangle Fire and its influence. A lot of workplace safety laws went into effect also, and we could still use more. Always at the commemoration, we acknowledge the workers who recently were injured. We have people speak, present-day workers also.
All right. We're speaking about the commemoration. It's going to be held next Friday, 11:30 to 1 o'clock at Washington Place. And Green Street just down there, not too far from Washington Square Park. You can be part of it. You can, you know, get a rose. You can chant one of the names of one of the girls that died in that. And listen, Annie and Lulu, thank you for coming on. And Ray Dean, thank you for coming on from Dublin. And, you know, just I'll see you down there. I don't know if Malachi will make it down there, but I will be down there looking for a rose to lay out like I've done in the years past. And Malachi, we're going to go out with a friend of mine, Joe Banjo Burke, who to me is one of the greatest singers. And we're coming up on Easter, and it's the Foggy Dew. And anybody in the Albany area, I'll be at the Irish American Heritage Museum. And Tuesday, I think I'm going to make a trip up to 105th Street, the Ellington and Broadway, where the Irish American writers and artists will be doing a salon. So now a little Joe Banjo Burke and the Foggy Dew.
Squadrons pass me by. No fife to hum, no battle drum to sound its low tattoo. But the Angelus bell or the Liffey swell rang out in the foggy dew. Flag is war. Say it's better to die neath an Irish stripe than at Silva or Soudal Bar. And from the plains
perfidious Albion rails. Let the Latin rain, seven tongues of flame did burn o'er the lines of steel.
Good morning. You're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York. Radio Free Erin with John McDonough and Malachi McCourt came to you live over listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York. Coming up at 12 noon is Voices of Resistance with Lucy Paguada Quesada and Andrea Vizu. Stay tuned.
A station dedicated to and sponsored by its listeners. From 1960 to present day, WBAI has been promoting an innovative perspective of news, public affairs, music, arts, health, and science. In order to provide a truly unique voice to New York City, WBAI receives its financial assistance from listeners like you. To help WBAI continue this tradition, you can become a BAI buddy by giving a generous monthly donation of as little as $10. It's a safe, secure, and simple way to support your local station. To become a BAI buddy, go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org.
Greetings, Tri-State. Imhotep, Gary Burke, Radio GBE, Mind Flight, on Sunday afternoons from 1 to 3 p.m. Pass the word and join us every Sunday afternoon, 1 to 3 p.m., right after church and after our early Wake Up Everybody show down the dial. It's culture, consciousness, community, and the special blend of infotainment and edutainment you've come to expect from Radio GBE. Sunday, 1 to 3 p.m., right here on 99.5 FM, WBAI.
WBAI Community Advisory Board meeting is on Sunday, March 19th at 1 p.m. And you are invited to attend. The CAB, or CAB, is an advisory board which reviews programming and other station policies. It represents the diverse views and interests of the communities WBAI serves. If you want to attend the meeting, you can join by teleconference at 619-309-1058. And the PIN number is 641-711. Everyone is invited to call in and join the meeting, and we're happy that more people are now attending CAB meetings. Once again, the call-in number is 619-309-1058, and the PIN number 641-711. We hope that you'll be able to attend. That's the Community Advisory Board meeting, WBAI, March 19th, Sunday, 1 p.m.
This is Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. April 19th through the 23rd, all roads lead to Baltimore, the State of the Black World Conference 5. Organized around the theme, Global Africans Rising, Empowerment, Reparations, and Healing, to address 8 major issue areas. Reimagining policing, gun violence and fratricide, gentrification, environmental justice, water as a human right, socially responsible entrepreneurship, making Black Lives Matter, the role of hip-hop in the Black freedom struggle, and building the U.S. and global reparations movement. The who's who of Black America and the Pan-African world will be in Baltimore, April 19th to the 23rd, for one of the great gatherings of Black people of the century. To check out the amazing program and take advantage of discount registration, go to the website, ibw21.org. That's ibw21.org.
Hi, this is Tony Roberts.